How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Well, hello, Jen.
Hey there. How are you?
Oh, you know, day 537 of quarantine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
you know,
it's Groundhog Day over and over and over and over and over. That's why we're here, to give you a little reprieve from the boredom. All right. So what do you have for us today?
Oh, Jen, let me tell you, this is something else. It's, you know, we feature evil people all the time. But sometimes there's just another kind of caliber of evil, if you will, I guess, you know, take it up a notch. All right, here we go. You ready?
Yep, let's go.
So today we're going to venture over to Arlington Heights, Illinois, for a story that, as I said, it is truly unbelievable. And when I say that, I mean, this is a perfect Lifetime movie. And maybe you've heard of it. I don't think so, but we'll see. So let's start at the beginning. It is February 2008 in Arlington Heights, Illinois. And now that's a suburb of Chicago. And it's here that we first meet a young man by the name of Justin Newman. Now, Justin is 20 years old, blonde hair, blue eyes, really cute, kind of a smaller guy, smaller framed guy. He's working at a local home improvement store, which I won't say the name of, but it's orange. And he's, you know, trying to figure out what to do with his life. At only 20 years old, he's still living at home with his mom. And it had been him and his mom for a while living together. He's a very generous kid. He'd been working since he could, and he'd always help his mom pay the bills. He was very likable, very responsible, very hardworking. He paid rent to his mom. He would always come and get her, no matter where he was, and take her to and from work. He was just that kind of kid, right?
Good kid.
So working at the improvement store, he'd meet all kinds of people, construction workers, contractors, the kind that would frequent it more than, like, just say, you or me, right? So one of these contractors was a man by the name of Ari Squire. Now, Ari was part owner of a local construction company. It was actually pretty well known in the community. Ari also loved big trucks. He liked, you know, fixing them up, driving them. I guess you'd call him sort of like a truck enthusiast, right? So it was a little bit more than a hobby, but a hobby nonetheless, right?
Okay. So he didn't do this for a living. He did it just
Construction was his job, but his second, you know, he could often be found out in the garage toying around with his truck or whatever. Now, because of Ari's job, he would often come into the improvement store a lot, and most of the workers knew him. He was actually on really good, friendly terms with most of them. He was a very happy kind of person, very gregarious. He really liked Justin. He took a liking to Justin right away, and the two of them kind of bonded. Ari would say that Justin reminded him of himself when he was a younger boy, kid, you know? Ari would often ask opinions about new products in the store, and Justin was always excited to help him out. And you know how that is, like, if you know, you get those customers that are your favorite if you've worked in retail or anything like that. So one afternoon when Justin was helping Ari with his order, Ari asked him if he, you know, hey, have you ever thought about maybe coming to work for me, getting another job? Have you thought about your future? All that kind of stuff. Well, Justin is over the moon, right? He's like, what? Yeah, heck yeah. So Ari said, you know, why don't you come aboard in my construction company, sort of like an apprentice? I'll supply you with the tools. In the process, you're going to get the knowledge that it takes to actually get going in the construction field. It's a good job for a 20-year-old, right?
Right.
So Justin was elated. He jumped at the chance. Ari told him, hey, you know, come over to my house in a few days. Let's say February 23rd. And like I said, this was in 2008. And come over, we'll talk, we'll get it all lined up. I'll give you the tools. You know, we'll sign anything that needs to be signed. And hey, how does $15 an hour to start sound?
Hmm.
Well, Justin's like, heck yeah, this is 2008. I think that was roughly double the minimum wage at that time, give or take. But construction workers work hard and they deserve it.
Uh-huh.
They deserve to make more money. So he had also told Justin, you know, with experience comes more money. So this is just the start. Ari's company was called Main Beam, like Main, like Main Street, Beam, like House Beam Construction, and it focused mostly on renovations. Now, Ari told Justin that the company had a big job coming up in Missouri, and he could really use his help on it, right? Uh-huh. So you're going to come with me, move down there for a couple weeks, we'll put you up, all that stuff. So on the morning of the 23rd, Justin heads over to Ari's. He's so excited to get started. He had that meeting scheduled to go talk to him about, you know, getting the tools and just kind of like some of the, I guess, things. I mean, it's his company. I'm sure he had to fill out like the, what is it, W-2 form or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
the pay stuff and all that. So Justin heads out pretty early in the morning to go meet Ari. You know, that's fine. But when the day comes, and now the day's half over, it's getting to be about 3 o'clock. And this was supposed to be, you know, like a 1 or 2 hour little meeting. Justin's not home yet, and his mom, she, you know, starts to think it's kind of strange. Justin had always been a responsible person. He was always one to follow up on his word. And like I mentioned earlier, he would always take his mom to and from work, and he needed to be home at a certain time to take his mother, Donna, to work.
Hmm. Okay.
So when he failed to show up, his mom immediately was like, something's not right. So she calls Justin on his cell phone. It goes straight to voicemail. So she's like, okay, you know, he's 20, so whatever. So she kind of waits by. She keeps trying his phone, keeps going to voicemail. The evening becomes night, and then it's the next morning. So she wakes up the next morning, and she's like, something is not right. So she's getting up, getting ready to start her day, figure out what's going on, and all of a sudden, a text message pops on her phone. It's from Justin. Now, the only thing is it was kind of uncharacteristic of Justin to text her. He wasn't really a texter.
Mm-hmm.
If he had something big to say, he would call her, and especially with how responsible he was to let that go on through the night. So she reads it, and the text says, hey, gone to Missouri for a few weeks for work, but I'll call soon.
Yeah, that's suspicious.
So Donna is immediately put off by this, knowing that Justin would not text this. I mean, that at least deserves a phone call. But also, he left the house in his clothes.
Right.
That's it. Not a bag. Nothing else, right?
He lived there.
He just left.
Right.
Yeah, he left dressed, basically. Mm-hmm. Nothing to be gone for an amount of weeks. So, of course, the wording in the text was also a little off-putting. And like I said earlier, he wasn't a texter. He was a caller for his mom, especially like at that time, you know?
And a mom knows too, you know?
Exactly. So perhaps it's his mom's intuition, a mother's intuition, or the fact that she knew her son and this was so not like him. She wasn't satisfied with that text. So she starts calling people. First, she calls the improvement store he works at to see if they had heard from Justin. They had not. Then Donna asked if they knew anything about a job that he had agreed to take with Ari. And they knew Ari because he was in there all the time. And was it true that they were heading to Missouri for a big job? So there's a pause on the line, which is followed by, I guess, shocking news is all you could say. And the manager on the phone says, I guess you didn't hear. Ari Squire died in a fire yesterday morning.
Ooh.
And that was the morning that Justin was to meet him.
Hmm, okay.
So now Ari's dead and Justin is missing. Panicking and desperate, Donna calls Ari's construction company. Ari's partner, Jim McCullough, answered the phone. Jim confirms that devastating news that Ari did in fact perish in a fire in his garage just the day before. But that wasn't the only news that Jim had. Jim tells Donna that the company did not hire Justin, or anybody for that matter, and there was no job in Missouri. They had no pending construction jobs in Missouri.
Hmm. Somebody's a liar. Somebody's a dirty, rotten liar.
Exactly. So now there's more questions with no answers. So Don is distraught, obviously. I would be devastated.
Oh, who wouldn't? Yeah.
As anybody would,
hello.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Not sure what to do, she immediately calls police to report Justin missing. She has no idea what's up, right? But she knows that this guy that he was supposed to go meet is now dead. Don informs them that Justin went to Ari Squire's home and hasn't been home since. Police had reported to the Squire home that morning, the day before, when a call came into police at around 8:20 a.m. from Ari's wife, Denise. Denise had reported to police that she had heard three loud sounds, similar to gunfire, but she didn't really know if it was gunfire or not. She just heard bangs, I guess. So Denise said after hearing the noise, she jumped up and raced to the garage door that connected the garage to the house, and she could immediately smell smoke. She opened the door, and the garage was fully engulfed in flames and smoke. She then called 911. After the fire was extinguished, the responders, they were shocked. Inside was a body on the garage floor. Now, the body was in work pants, a shirt, like a dark-colored shirt, and work boots. And it was on the creeper that goes underneath the car. Do you know what that is?
The creeper that goes under the car?
Yeah.
Is it like little roller thing that they go
yes,
in and out?
Yes, that's mm-hmm. the name of it. Yep. Mm-hmm. A creeper is that little wheeled flat thing. Because I was like, what is that thing called? Similar to the door in the garage. I was like, that thing has to have a name. It's called a
creeper. Because you creep
creeper
under
is
them.
The, yeah, mm-hmm. creeper is the little wheeled flat thing you stick under cars. That's what I
that
wrote.
That you lie under, door. Right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
To fix underneath a car.
Yeah. So you can kind of zoom under and out. Creeper.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So detectives were then called in since they had a dead body. First responders called the detectives. They came in. They looked around the garage to see if anything jumped out at them. As they entered the garage, they could immediately smell diesel fuel and a lot of it. But, you know, that was a truck. He was working on a truck, so that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
They locate a body under the right side of the car. The body was burnt so severely, they couldn't even tell what the person looked like. It seemed that the jack under the car had slipped, and talk about an awful way to go, and then the truck came down and crushed Ari. Ugh. Checking the pockets of the body, they retrieve a wallet and open it to find the ID inside was that of Ari Squire. Investigators believe that the truck crushed Ari's chest, and during the frenzy, a light that he was using, you know, those hanger lights that you hang on stuff, mm-hmm. you know what I'm talking about, like in the garage, mm-hmm. had dropped from all of this commotion, and it caused a fire to erupt. Now, that is what they believed at first, but then they started talking it out, and they weren't so sure. Ari worked on trucks for a hobby, but he had done it all his life, and he really knows how a jack works and how it needs to be set up so that it's safe. Also, the body was burnt so badly, but yet
shocking.
The things around it
uh-huh.
weren't as charred as his body. Detectives now believe that perhaps maybe this wasn't an accident after all, and that Ari Squire was murdered. Now, Denise Squire had called 911 to report that fire. She didn't know where her husband was or anything like that. So detectives, you know, they're like, okay, we have to go in and talk to Denise, but we also have to tell her that it wasn't just a fire, that her husband is in that garage. He's passed. He's gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, the detectives are expecting a little bit of, you know, tears, screaming, something at all.
Right.
When they tell her that her husband's dead, but they get a stone face response.
Hmm.
The detectives went in there and told her that Ari was dead. They didn't want to mention that they suspected he may be murdered and that it was, in fact, a crime scene. They just kind of wanted to feel her out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Jen, we all handle grief differently.
Mm-hmm.
But police then tell her that since the body was so badly burned, they needed help identifying him. And did he have any, you know, the standard question, any birthmarks, scars, piercings, tattoos, anything like that?
Mm-hmm.
Denise says, I don't know.
Hmm.
Say what? Thank you. So officers are like, okay, nothing like a mark or anything. She says he may have a tattoo, but I'm not sure.
What? And who? Yeah. And this is his wife?
Yes. Yes. Huh. They were married for 14 years at this point.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. So finally, she says, because I think the detectives were like, you've got to be kidding me. Right?
Yeah.
So finally she said that, yeah, she thinks he has a tattoo on his arm, but she's not sure. But it's on his arm, maybe, and it's an American flag. And again, Jen, what can I say? We all handle grief differently, but come on now. Really?
Mm-hmm. No, that it sounds like she's covering for something. She knows what's going on.
How do you not know somebody has a tattoo?
Somebody that you're married with? Come on. Somebody you're married with or married to for how long?
14 years.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah. She's in on it.
So officers ask her, hey, what was Ari doing the night before? You know, because he had succumbed to this. Or they think it's in the morning, but maybe not. Maybe it was the night before. She says, I don't know. So she then goes on to say that they weren't happily married and they did sleep in different beds. But okay, that happens a lot. You still kind of know somebody's routine if you live with them, I think, right?
You would think so.
So with not much to go on, officers leave and, you know, they hit the pavement. So when Donna, who is Justin's mom, calls in about her missing son, they're thrilled. They're like, okay, so maybe this is connected. You know, here's this kid that's missing. He was supposed to meet this guy. So, you know, it's kind of giving them a little hope. At this point, it's looking more and more like police needed to find Justin and talk to him, especially since he was the last one to see Ari alive. Police put out a BOLO, all points bulletin, to officers with the hope that maybe they can find this young man, as he's got some splaining to do. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
You got to come in, Justin. We need to talk to you. Police also know that Justin may have that Missouri connection since he had told his mother about going to Missouri for work. So police expand their BOLO. So it's going to the neighboring states and things like that. While police are working the case, the medical examiner was working on Ari's charred body.
Mm.
Or trying to. I say trying because an angered and demanding Denise Squire keeps calling the medical office demanding to get her husband's body back. Because, don't you know, Jen, she is planning a service for him.
Mm.
She is leaving messages and calling them constantly. I need him back. I need him back. I need his body back. Now, I find this odd for many reasons, but mostly her husband was burnt beyond recognition.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like she's really going to have an open casket. You're going to have a memorial service for him.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need his body, right?
Unless you need it to get away from the coroner so you won't find out what's really going on.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, as a loved one passed on so horrifically like that, as a family member, you want to know how they died. Unless, of course, you already know.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after Ari's death, Denise had arranged for a wake of sorts at a local Italian eatery nearby, and 120 people came to pay their respects. Okay. Kudos to her. That's fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
That happens. So, you know, she's trying to move forward. With all this bizarre behavior from Denise, police know that they need to bring her back in for questioning. Denise tells them that she has never heard of the name Justin Newhouse.
Hmm.
She also tells police that the construction company was struggling and that Ari worked a lot of hours with little to show for it. And struggling may be a nice word for it, kind word for it. They're actually deeply in debt to the tune of over $500,000.
Well, you don't say. That's kind of a new situation that would happen in any kind of these murder situations, right?
Right.
That money would never play a part in it.
Never does, Jen.
Mm-mm.
Never does. But that wasn't all. It seems that Ari had some legal troubles. And when I say legal troubles, I mean fraud, as in he was actually convicted federally of committing fraud. In 2007, he had pleaded guilty to Medicare fraud in connection with a business called AccuCare, Inc. Mm-hmm. And he had to pay $63,000 to settle that matter. There's also another incident that he had with a little fraud, and I want to say it was somewhere around $150,000 that he had to pay.
Oh, wow.
So the boy's in trouble, and he's a little shady too, right?
You think?
I know, Jen. I know.
Hmm.
Of course, police ask the next logical question. Did Ari have a life insurance policy? So she hesitates, but then she finally says that he didn't have one, or not one she knows about anyway.
Liar.
I mean, really?
I mean,
you have to know that, right? I mean, kind of. You might not know the amount, maybe, but you know that, I don't know. He has a construction job. Like, of course he's going to have a life insurance policy.
Did she not think that the police wouldn't check up on that? They couldn't find out?
I think we have a whole little cast of characters right here that just aren't real smart. Mm-hmm. That's all I got to say about that. So without anything to hold her on, police have to let her go. Police are also now getting a better idea of what might have happened and who was involved. The picture is starting to come into focus, and it's actually about to become crystal clear. Or is it, Jen?
It's kind of clear now, I think. But I would like to get it a little bit, you know.
Jen?
Hmm?
I wrote this. Uh-huh. Jen, uh-huh. You are going to love this part.
Oh, nice. That,
seriously. Jen, you're going to love this part. A call comes in from the police department from, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Eureka, Missouri.
Ah, not too far from us. That's great.
So an officer was cruising around and he notices a car with an Illinois plate parked in a little dive motel. That's not strange. That's not weird in and of itself. But he notices that the license plate is barely hanging on, like hanging on by a bolt.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little weird. And I'm sure if you know Eureka, I'm going to say there's not a lot of crime there. There's not a lot going on. So this guy is probably like,
well, there's,
heck yeah, I got
there's Six Flags.
Something to do. So like I said, the officer sees this and I'm like, I'm sure he's excited because he's like, okay. So he runs the tag numbers and I'll be gosh, golly darn, bam. It comes back belonging to Justin Newman.
Oh.
Now, Justin Newman is the missing man from the Chicago area who is wanted for questioning in regards to the death of Ari Squire. Now, you know, this little Eureka policeman was just like, are you? Oh, wee, look, woohoo. Right. He had something to do on a night. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? That's what I'm thinking. Poor guy.
I don't know. Eureka could get kind of dangerous, I would guess.
Can't. It's like Arnold. Same thing. Right? There's not that much going on. It's not like downtown Chicago or downtown St. Louis. I could be wrong. Whatever. The officer goes inside the motel registration area to inquire about the car, as well as if a room had been rented to anybody by the name of Justin Newman. And guess what, Jen?
It had or it had not.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Officer gets a little weirded out because he's knowing that this person's wanted for questioning in a murder. So he calls for backup. Officers arrive and they creep up to the room door. They knock on the door. No one answers. They knock again, much harder this time. And again, no one answers. They decide they need to go in. As they're unlocking the door, shots ring out. Hmm. And to be more precise, one shot.
Somebody committed suicide.
See where I'm going with this? Once inside, they see Justin on the bed with blood everywhere. A gun is next to him.
Mm-hmm.
Justin had just killed himself, taking all those unanswered questions with him forever. But you know, something was not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
The officer checks his ID, and the ID does say Justin Newhouse. But he didn't really match the description. The dead guy didn't look like the photo, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there is hair dye on the counter. So he's like, okay, the guy colored his hair. Officers call in and they say, hey, does Justin have some identifying mark, tattoo or whatever? And they say, yes, he has the letter J tattooed on his forearm. So they check. There's no tattoo on either forearm.
Huh. Good thing they didn't ask Ari's wife. She wouldn't know.
So they're perplexed, but they continue to look around. On a hunch, he lifts up his shirt sleeve. Right there on his shoulder is the American flag tattoo. The man dead on the bed is Ari Squire. Dun, dun, dun.
Mm-hmm.
This would be better if you would have pretended not to know the whole time.
Sorry.
So if this is the man on the bed is Ari Squire, who is the dead man on Ari Squire's garage floor? Police suspect that they know, but they need proof. Detectives get a sample of DNA from Justin's mother, and within a short amount of time, the results are back, and the burnt body was actually Justin Newman.
Poor Justin's mom.
20 years old.
Horrible.
That's a baby.
Police learn that Ari was living as Justin Newman in that motel since arriving there 7 days earlier. So he essentially killed Justin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Assumed his identity, hence the hair dye, and he had even purchased blue contacts. They found blue contacts in the hotel room.
Oh, Jesus.
So it's all his plan, they think, was to continue on life as Justin, who's 20 and Ari is like 40 something, but okay. Due to his dire financial state, Ari decided to fake his own death by using young Justin as a body double for himself. He would then go on to live as Justin without owing anybody a penny, leaving his wife behind, who would escape those financial constraints since he would be declared dead. He was, you know, dead and it was murder.
Right.
So it was an accident, I guess. So now they need to know what his wife, Denise, knew and if she was part of this big plan.
Oh, she has to be.
So police call her in. And this time, they get a very different emotional response from her. Remember earlier, she had that stone face look like whatever, mm-hmm. right? And I don't know if he had whatever. They inform her that her husband was located in Eureka, Missouri, in a hotel. But before police could get to him, he killed himself. Now, unlike the first time, tears began flowing. Disbelief sets in. She said they had to be wrong because Ari was in the morgue. That body was in the morgue. So you have to ask yourself, why would she cry this time? Mm-hmm. How is this any different than the initial time that they told her he was dead? Unless, perhaps, she knew the first time he was not dead at all, but very much alive somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Horrible.
Police put the pressure on her, okay? They're digging in. And they're telling her that she was involved and that they're going to dig into the finances to prove it. And, you know, at first she's just like, I don't know what you're talking about. She's crying. She's very upset. Again, unlike the first time. So then they tell her that they are going to dive in and look at their financials. They're going to get those subpoenaed. Well, Denise starts talking and it turns out that there was an insurance policy, just a little tiny small one on Ari, a small one to the tune of $5 million.
Oh, no, really? $5 million?
Yeah. But per usual, the person has to die by accident, not by suicide, in order to get that money. Police also learned through talking to employees who worked with Justin that Justin was not the first one that was offered a job by Ari. Or should I say, Ari approached another person who looked more like Ari than the blonde Justin. That's right. Ari had picked somebody else out first to do this, okay? He invited his first person over, who was a married dad.
Ugh.
How heartbreaking is this? Offered him a job, paying him $60,000 a year. Now, for some reason, this person looked way more like Ari, but that day he overslept and he never made it to his house. So Ari approached Justin, and Justin, sadly, always reliable Justin, the one that did everything that he was supposed to do, helped his mom pay rent, has been working since he was a young kid to help pay bills, would actually show up when he said he would. And that would be his final demise.
Heartbreaking.
What is wrong with people? He's a 20-year-old kid. Shame on you.
$5 million is what's wrong with him.
That's right. So police are putting this all together. They believe that once Justin arrived at Ari's house, Ari knocked him out, changed his clothes, placed him under the trunk in that creeper, dropped the jack on him, and this was horrifying. He was alive, they believe, to this point, right? He was knocked out, but he was alive. Dropping the truck on him caused his heart to explode, okay? That was it. That's what killed him. They believe Ari put some sort of accelerant on him, and that's why it was more on him as a person.
Right, than around the area.
And I saw some of the autopsy photos. It was horrible, mm-hmm. horrible, right?
It's never fun to look at burned bodies.
Ari then drove Justin's car to the hotel in Eureka, Missouri that day, right then. And the next day, he woke up that morning and sent Justin's mom, Donna, that text posing as Justin. All of this, Jen, to get out of his money problems. Are you kidding me?
And he still got out of it because he killed himself. He left his wife holding the ball.
Coward.
Exactly. Huge coward.
So since Ari was dead, police would now need to try to prove that Denise was in on this. But sadly, they were unable to do so. No charges were brought against Denise. However, Donna, Justin's mom, you go, Donna, and Justin's older brother would file a civil suit against her, claiming that she was part of this plan all along. Donna won and received $6 million in the suit. I couldn't find if she had really received this. I found some articles that said that she received part, like $1.5 million. I found some that said that they didn't know. So I'm not really sure. But I loved that it was $6 million, which was $1 million more than she was supposed to get, right?
Plus, that's on top of all the other crap that they owed, too.
So a little footnote to all this. During the investigation, sheriff's investigators uncovered some emails that Ari had sent to Denise Squire, his wife, to nail down the details about disposing of the body and holding a memorial service. Seriously, he sent her emails about this, right? He had sent the messages shortly after the staged accident, when he was supposed to be dead, by the way. Poor Denise. She just claimed that she thought the emails were written before her husband fake died.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
They're not dated or anything.
So, you know, you think that Ari's not the only one that's shady, but like I said, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Ari's father, his name was Morris Squire, and he had owned a psychiatric facility in Des Plaines, Illinois. And it seems that the father sold it for $10 million in 1999 so the hospital could pay $4 million to settle a civil Medicare fraud suit that involved charging Alzheimer's patients for care they didn't need. Shocker, right?
Wow.
So the dad did this too. So they're all slimy.
Crooked.
Morris Squire, who was Ari's dad, actually outlived his son, and he died at the age of 90 in 2014. So that's, is that crazy or what?
Unbelievable. Crazy. Like, how, seriously, okay. I know money problems cause a lot of stress. I know that you never think, I mean, we've all been there. But to actually want to kill somebody to get,
A kid though,
I know.
He's 20. And then his other option was a dad? I'm not even sure which one's worse.
Well,
He should have faked his own death on his own. Like, you don't need a body. He should have just faked it. I mean, she would have had to wait 7 years to get the money to declare him dead, but whatever. Then you don't harm anybody else, and he could be living his best life right now.
Or how about you just pay the fucking money? How about you just do it? How about...
He doesn't have the money, Jen. That's how they got in this situation in the first place.
You know what? There's a lot of people that owe money that don't have it, but they work out things to make...
Bankruptcy, for one.
Something,
just do it.
Yes.
Like, really?
Unbelievable scummy people.
I know you figured it out, but I did not. So, like, I stumbled upon this, and I was just like, oh, he's cute. He's a little bitty thing, little sprite of a boy, right? Cute, little blonde hair, blue-eyed. And I'm like, oh, he's cute, right? Doesn't even look 20.
Yeah.
Looks maybe 14 or 15. And I was like, oh, my gosh, that's terrible. So I'm all like, he killed that guy. And as I kept reading, I'm like, what?
That's horrible.
Like, you know.
That's horrible.
Picked him because he had like the same build and stuff. So then Ding Dong had to go buy hair dye and blue contacts because whatever.
See,
I
can't even believe that they couldn't get his wife. I mean, it seems pretty obvious that she knew what was going on.
Of course she did. She didn't cry the first time because shocked. How can you bold face lie to officers?
Well,
you know what I mean?
But you would think that there'd be some kind of, we have people on death row for circumstantial evidence. You should at least be able to find something on this.
She still lives in the Chicago area under a different name.
I would hope so.
Say, but wow.
Oh, do it. Mm-mm. Let's out her.
Absolutely not. Jen, we make no money. They sue us.
I know.
Uh-uh.
We'll have to be looking for bodies to take over ours.
It'd be like, here's my dog. Oh, wait, here's a cute sweater. Does that count for anything? It's all I got.
I'd never let my dog go.
It's all I got. I know you wouldn't.
Yeah, that's unreal.
I just can't. It takes a lot to shock me. I got to tell you, from doing this podcast and stuff, I've learned a lot of things. I got to tell you, honestly, people in the pod world, At first, I was always, generally, I still am, pro-police. Like, I like them. I like police officers. I think they do a great job for what they get paid for. I mean, God bless you for going in and putting your life on the line. But I also never realized how many mistakes are there. And then you think, well, I guess it's true. We're all human. Like, it is. And you're feeling just like in a regular job. You feel the pressure to make charges stick. Mm-hmm. You make convictions go, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I never quite realized. I think, long story short, I think after doing this pod, some of my views have changed. Let's put it that way. There we go. I could have said that at the beginning, but no.
About police?
Why did I say all that? Everything. Convictions, prosecutors, justice, law, all of it. All of it. So, yeah.
Well, for the most part, people are good. But
I think that was it. That's what I always believed. I was like, well, they wouldn't lie. But I think there are people that lie. But you know what? Then I think, you know what? I'm a better person for believing that people tell the truth. So whatever. You be jaded, people. Whatever. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Who wants to live that way?
I guess I'm stupid because I trust everybody until they give me a reason not to. So
that's exactly what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. That's a better way to live, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's terrible to be negative Nancy all the time and think the world's out to get you. And so if that's the alternative, I'd rather be Polly Sunshine and be whatever.
Pollyanna. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I try to be Pollyanna because if not, it gets me too depressed.
And I do. I think for the most part, people are good, but there's also people that are shady. All right. That's all I got.
All right.
Remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Bain. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
All right, you can cut that other shit out, Nico. Just use that part.
Okay. Cut it out, Nico. We still got to get him a shirt that says that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drinking a beer, so excuse me, and I'm burping because I got a little indigestion. And it's too late for me to drink a soda because I don't drink soda afternoon.
No, so a beer's a better choice.
Yeah, because I burp and, you know.
Okay.
I ate steak last night, Jen. Steak. You know.
And you have indigestion from last night?
All day.
Yeah. Ready? That might be a heart attack.
Thanks. It's always like that when I eat steak, but I like steak, so I don't care. I don't know what it's called. But anyway, she went to that and on her,
the garage door leading into the kitchen, you mean?
Yeah, but that sounds weird because then you think garage door, like lifting it up, right? Don't you?
The door to the garage. That leads into the kitchen.
Yeah. That's what I said. Sort of. In a roundabout way.
Okay.
See, aren't you laughing? You're supposed to be laughing. Just wait to this. We could have had fun with this, except people died. Because it's crazy. Okay, hold on. We're going to start a little bit earlier. After the fire was extinguished, the responders were shook. Were shook. I wrote, were shook. Teen language.
Were should shook. Be. They were shooken to the core. Not stirred. They were shooken.
Poor Nico. I would hate to have to be him and edit us. That's all I got to say about that.
I hated to edit us when we were doing it ourselves. But I asked.
Like two ADD people can't even stay focused. You get sidetracked. Whatever. Okay. See? Like that. Right there. Here we go. I know. I'm sorry.
I didn't have that problem earlier. Try to do that away from the microphone.
I did, Jen. I bent over like, I don't know, 18 inches to the side. Swear to God.
Okay.
Ow. Now I bit my tongue. So police also knew that... Take out the so. God, I hate that. I thought we were doing better with that. I guess not.
Well, we don't have any Nothing. We got plenty of nothing coming up.
It's the pandemic. We got nothing.
We got nothing. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right.